There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, friends. Welcome back. This is Stack and Penny's Championship Edition, talking to a champion himself. Ryan Flores, front tire changer of Ryan Blaney's Ford Mustang, wrapping up his championship day. We also crowned Cole Custer, who we talked to on Saturday night, and Ben Rhodes. A ton of stuff to get into right here on Stack and Penny's. Buckle up. We are presented by Mobile One.
Stacking them deep, selling them cheap.
It tastes like gasoline, rubber, and victory.
We're just out here stacking pennies.
And we're in it. Big day, guys. Holy moly. Let's just get right to it. I'm joined by one of my best friends, if not the best friend I have. And now he is a 2023 Cup Series tire changing champion, Mr. Ryan Flores.
What a couple days it's been.
Let's freaking go. Round of applause.
Sounds good. Yay. Oh,
you look like a champion.
I feel like one. You
still look a little hungover.
I don't go too hard on the alcohol. I'm not very good at it. But I knocked down a Stogie.
Did you? Yeah. Little championship.
Oh, yeah.
Cigar, huh?
Yeah, they rented out a bar in Westgate there, where we all stay in Phoenix. And I think Blaney had a puking rally.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a couple. My carrier, Trevor Apsey, he's a pretty built guy. He had his button-down shirt all the way unbuttoned at one point. Just
was Roger there getting a little wild?
Roger wasn't there. Everybody else was. It was a good time. Yeah, it was a good time without being too much of a good time. You know, it didn't get too crazy. But yeah,
flew back yesterday.
You land and just got smacked right in the face with powder coat oven was broke. So I went there and fixed that. But yeah, like I think that's been the biggest thing. So I was fortunate enough to be on the car in 2011 with Tony Stewart when we won the championship. I didn't have as much of an impact on that car as like changing tires or anything. So it's definitely different, but it felt like, you know, being 23 at that time, like you're going to win the championship and everything's going to be different the next day. Like everything's like the world is a different place and you wake up Monday and it's just Monday.
It's just the same.
It's like, yeah. And I think that's
pride in it.
Yeah. And like, you know, here, 12, 13 years later to win again and kind of just the road to get here and the win as a tire changer. It's just like, I just feel more of like a sense of accomplishment and kind of almost like a weight's lifted off your shoulders.
So we can get right into your day. But let's talk about a little bit of the emergence of Ryan Blaney. We talked about it a little bit in previous shows, but you and I talk about it a lot and a lot of guys, Kyle Petty had some sharp words earlier in the season compared Ryan Blaney to Casey Kane. And I would agree with him at that point of the season. He had some valid points. But I think halfway through the playoffs, or was there a distinct point where there's a little bit of maturation, a little bit of closing out the day when the 12 car has speed? Because last year, you didn't win a race besides the All-Star race, won the most amount of stages but couldn't get in victory lane. Big difference between last year and this year's playoff run.
Yeah, I think closing out the 600 was a big deal from start to finish because I think even Kyle was pretty honest with me when he came in and did Stack and Penny. He said, y'all got to figure out how to finish races off. And I think that when I look at the season as a whole, like we get into the playoffs and Texas, Ryan, we had a decent day and Ryan sped on pit road on the last pit stop, then ended up wrecked. And I think that was kind of a watershed moment for him, like, hey, am I going to take the bull by the horns here and get this back? Or, you know, am I going to let this playoff hope disappear? And we go to Talladega with one goal and knew that we were there to win the race and just executed the day flawlessly. There was a point in time in that day, the only flaw we had in the whole day was missed block in the second stage, and we didn't get stage points in the second stage. And he just reeled it back in. Ryan reeled it back in. He got a little frustrated, reeled it back in, and went on and won the race. And it was like, hey, we came here knowing we could win this race, knowing we needed to win this race, and we did it. And then, you know, Vegas was strong, Homestead was strong, and then obviously Martinsville was just impressive. But, like, it's impressive to win, but to score points in every stage of the round of eight, well, we scored points in every stage in the last four races. And that just shows the overall strength of the team. That means you're not, you know, losing track position or having bad stops. So yeah, it was, as far as Ryan goes, I think just finishing off Talladega and being like, hey, we're doing this.
Well, that was part of the conversation, or some of the topics that the media was really poking on with that, with Team Penske in general, lacking a lot of pace. And it was almost like a survive in advance. Joey talked about it last year. They didn't have a lot of pace throughout the course of the year and timed it right towards the end of the playoffs. And Ryan kept harping on it, particularly in his post-race interviews after Phoenix, was they got hot at the right time. They a lot of hard work by Jonathan Hassel, the crew chief over there, who had a pretty good quote. I saw sent him a lawsuit for trying to steal Stack and Pennies. Sitting there next to Roger Penske, talking about how what was he referring to? Just details on the course of the year, right?
Dude, you know the car, right? Like, I think when Roush went on their kind of run in the 17, won three races or whatever it was like, hey, stop blaming it on the car. These guys have the same thing. Let's go. And I think it was kind of a wake up call for everybody. But yeah, he said, you just stack pennies become nickels become dimes, then all of a sudden you have dollars, which is why the name of this show is what it is. That's so much of what cup racing is, especially now that we all have the same parts and pieces. It's just little
pennies
stuff
everywhere,
little stuff. So, and it's everywhere. It's from the racetrack to pit road to in the garage area during the week. It's just a little bit everywhere.
So you mentioned before we started rolling here, it feels like a weight is off your shoulder. I'd imagine a weight probably feels like it's off of Blaney's shoulder as well. But what's the overall sentiment behind that 12 teams mindset after the checker flag was over?
Yeah, so it's just been a ton of work, and I think that's why Hassler, you know, said that the Stack and Penny thing, because like when I got put on this car last year in the middle of the season, it was kind of everybody was a little bit at each other's throats, and there just wasn't like a winning culture around it, right? The culture was like what Kyle Petty said, like, yeah, they're going to run good, but they're going to fold up from top to bottom. And the people on this team have all won championships. They've all been super successful. And it was just kind of, it's so easy to become like a road crew and a pit crew separated, and you don't really ever spend time together. But to be in the same shop, like Hassler's brought everybody together. We work out as one team on Wednesdays, and Blaney's been around a lot. And it's just getting together and humanizing each other, right? That way it makes it so much easier when you do have a tough stop or you don't have the fastest car that weekend or something. You know, you're inevitably through a 38-week season going to have your downtimes. And that's when the strength of your team is tested. And then also when you're in a championship run, that's when the strength of your team is tested, because that's when you got to realize who has everybody's back and, you know, who has everybody's back. Like if I think the guys behind the wall have my back and they know that I have their back, we're all going to be better.
That's right.
And the same thing with Blaney too. Like there was points in time where like the conversation's been had, like, hey man, if we have a bad stop, like we know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We didn't want to have a bad stop.
Like we know. And that's and you also have to know, like, Ryan, to know Ryan, you got to know Dave. And they're, like, very quiet, unassuming guys. But everybody found out again this weekend when he flipped Ross Chastain off and kind of let him have it on the radio. There's a lot of fire in there when that dude puts his helmet on.
Well, it's a competitor, right? I mean, everybody kind of handles the pressure. Everybody kind of handles the emotions you feel driving a race car a little bit differently. And I'll say this, he's pretty consistent. Whether it's a good day or a bad day, Ryan Blaney is fired up on the radio.
Dude, always. It's funny because it comes up like three or four times a year. People are like, man, Blaney really gets after on the radio.
It's every week.
I saw a chart of F-bombs throughout this season. I guess there's somebody that live tweets the radio. Because they go on the NASCAR app and listen to it, and they live tweet it. And yeah, the F-bombs on the radio, it's... Blaney was down like tenth of a percent. He was down, but...
For this season?
Yeah, but our spotter, Josh Williams, was up quite a bit. And Hassler was at zero. He's got... In 3 years, Hassler has one F-bomb.
Oh, yeah. I had a couple this week. I generally try... Yeah,
what was going on?
We just ran like a...
How much in your head when your car wasn't fast was like, okay, don't wreck because we got to finish this off?
Not much. I was just trying to drive it as fast as I could so I can see if there was any potential speed in it. There just wasn't. We struggled with the handling from practice, trying to get some rear grip built into it. Couldn't get a handle on it and didn't make any really positive gains in the race and just legitimately raced AJ Allmendinger for like second to last all day. So it sucked to finish off the year like that. Because I feel like we have done everything in our control really well. The stat of, I thought we were one of like 30 that went all year without a DNF. I guess we were one of only 15.
Oh, wow.
That have ever went the entire season with no DNF, which I think that bodes super, super well for our team. And then just the ability to prepare cars that are reliable. And we've had, there's one thing riding around dead last and finishing all the races, but we were in the mix. Several career bests, more laps led by probably 200% than every other year in my career, several top 10. So every measurable stat for our 17 this year is better. And that's just like literally what we talked about, stacking pennies. So we're just doing the small details right, finishing races. Unfortunately, we ended on a down note, but trying to really be positive of our team because we should celebrate the season we had. It's been better than pretty much everybody that's worked at our team. Spire's best year by far. My best year as a driver by far. Sparks' best year as a crew chief by far. So, like, it is hard to celebrate those small things, but it's the things we set out to do, and they were lofty goals when we set them, but when we achieve them, it's like you get acclimated to those goals, and it's like, hang on a second. We were nowhere near as good as we are right now last year.
Yeah.
So let's not, like, forget about the progress we made. So trying to keep that in perspective has been somewhat challenging this week, especially now that we feel like we're a top 20 team every week. To end like that is frustrating, but there's a NASCAR organization test December 5th and 6th. So we'll be able to cut some laps at Phoenix.
Phoenix.
Yeah.
Everybody's going?
No, there's probably six teams going.
Okay.
Trying the new up, down splitter, some different tire combinations, some different diffuser combinations for our car, and just for me to cut some laps at Phoenix, that's been our kind of our Achilles heel.
I love the talk. Like, you hear a lot of stuff like, well, like talking about deserving champions, but like talking about testing, that's what makes me think of it, is everybody's like, well, you know, if Blaney makes the Phoenix, he's good there, so it's going to work out for him. And it's like, well, hell, everybody knows we're going to Phoenix for the last race. It's been on the schedule. Like,
but right. Again, like, yeah, all year.
Like, Ryan Blaney wasn't just born being good at Phoenix.
Yeah,
it's a lot of work, right? And that's where, like, I loved so much last week when the lucky thing came up, right? Because that's it. Like, you know that next year at Phoenix, it's going to...
That's where we finish.
If a seven car has a chance to win a championship...
You got to be good there.
You have to be good there. Everybody knows that. And it depends on how you work at it, right? No one's going to go, well, we have no shot at winning the championship because my driver's not real good at Phoenix.
Yeah, nobody thinks
that's so. A thing.
You put freaking hours on the simulator until your retinas burn out to try to get better at it and find little nuances about it. But yeah, I still laugh about that question because somebody that would ask or somebody that would insinuate luck getting that 12 team to the championship four hasn't put the work in themselves and chalks it up to luck.
Yeah.
There's nothing lucky about it. You put yourself in the right positions to be at the on the positive side of breaks, right? Whether it's pace, whether it's positioning on the racetrack, whether it's preparation, all of that doesn't happen by chance.
Well, it's like I come back to the thing you told me years ago: is those who know, but ones who know will know. And like the fans are always going to roast you, right? Like,
yeah,
I'll go on Twitter and they'll be like, "Yeah, but you lost spot to the five on the last stop." I'm like, "Yeah, sure did." Like. Also did a 9.9, and they were 3/10 better on the stop, and I think half second better. It was like half and half better on rolling time. They were better than the 24 on rolling time, which Kyle Larson is super aggressive getting to pit road. We saw that at Homestead, and dude, he almost, we were down there in pit stall 38, so you could see everybody entering the track.
Was that him that was blocked all four tires up smoking?
He almost blew the 24's back bumper off again. Really? Yeah. Yeah, I was talking to
just
him
no
and
barrels
Cliff.
To hit.
Yeah, I was talking to him and Cliff after the race, and I was like, "Yeah, I saw you almost ass packed the 24." And Cliff was like, "I didn't even have to look at the TV. I knew you were going to do that again." It was just so funny. but yeah, that dude, the emotions of like that money stop though.
That's, what'd that feel like, dude?
I think it was, because
you guys were the first, probably one of the first cars to peel off.
Yeah, so it was kind of like peaceful back there, because really there was just buses. Like if you're on the backstretch,
yeah, especially down
buses, and there was just like one lady standing on her bus. But if you turned around and looked towards the pit box, and we were in it, there was an opening in front of us, and it was packed, and there was one lady that was like, "God!" like freaking out the whole race. I don't know how she kept this energy the whole race, but
caution drop, what, 15 to go maybe?
I think it was like 30.
Okay,
but. It was like,
now are you guys on your open comms be like, "All right, boys, this is it.
So let's go."
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a good stop. It wasn't a great stop, but I took a little bit of offense to Todd Gordon on Inside the Race this week. Steve Letard asked him, "What are your quarrels with the 12? And he said, "The pit crew, it's not a bad pit crew, but like they just don't have the pace like the 5 car does." And Steve Letard said, "Yeah, these guys are a diesel engine. They just keep chugging. They're not going to do the fastest pit stop. They're not going to hold that record, but they're going to keep you in the race." And I go back to like when I first got into changing tires. That's what my point I'm going with is, when as a pit crew, you sometimes chase that number, or you want to be the best on pit road. The Hendrick cars have been better than everybody all year long. Nobody's been able to match their pace consistently. It was their 4 cars and then the rest of the field. Then you give them pit stall 1 and pit stall 6, where they're 2 of the best pit stalls at Phoenix. But our goal, and I go back, I heard something the other day that said, really when you're nervous, you're just anxious. It's just anxiety. And I heard that anxiety and gratitude live in the same place of your brain. So you can't have both at the same time. So what it had been for me this week, instead of being anxious about it, it was just like really reflecting on like the journey it's been to get here, why I started, right? Like when that caution comes out, I don't go, "Oh,
yeah."
I go, This is why you started.
Yeah.
Like when we were, when we were working out above the seat shop and I was at Roush hitting lug nuts at lunchtime, like when they wouldn't even give me a shot to do anything.
What was that, 2008?
2007, 8. Like I went 2007, 8, 9, and 10 in the pit practice area by myself. Like I wasn't even part of the pit crew. I just built side skirts and crush panels in the fab shop. And I was like, "Hey, I want to be a tire changer too." And they were like, "Yeah, you can't do that. You'll never do that." And there was like one guy, Rodney Fetters, who I actually just texted. Good stat. He pitted for you and your dad. Him and Brad Robinson. Him and Brad Robinson, who's the gas man emoji from Roush. They helped me out a lot. The guy who's like their athletic director was like, "Who are you?" Like that's what he said to me. Like that's where I was in my tire change career. He's like, "Yeah, okay, man. See ya." Yeah,
don't let the door hit you in the ass.
Like,
on the way out.
Like, goodbye. So I just regularly reflect on that and those times in the pit stop area, and then going to Stuart Haas and getting the chances. And I go back to Cheddar Bob, who's longtime car chief on the 4 car. And he was our gas man on the 39 with Ryan Newman before he was a car chief. And he would always say, when I first got on that car, I was probably in a little over my head, and we were right away in the playoffs. And he would say, "Keep him in the race. Give him a chance. Just give him a chance. We don't have to be superheroes. Just give him a chance." And that's kind of how we approached this year. We had been through so much on the 12. We lost a race every single way you could ever draw up. We could write a book on how to lose a race, whether it be on pit road, on the track, whatever it is, right? So it's like, okay, we are going to be the most solid pit crew on pit road. We are going to keep them in the race. We're going to give them a chance, and we're going to come out, you know, within one or two, we're going to, you know, gaintain, either come out within one or two of where we came in. And on the last stop, we know we did a good one, and we put the ball in his court. Yes, the five beat us, and we almost beat the one car out. We were to their door numbers. And the 24, you're not going to beat them in pit stall one. Like, they were touch fast. On the average on the day, we were fourth or fifth. I think the five car was second, and the 24 was one behind us, fifth or sixth. So, like, we had a championship day on pit road. It's just everybody put so much stock into that last pit stop because the five car won the race there. Well, like, yeah, the five car's pit stop at Phoenix that year won the championship was badass, but they don't win it without having pit stall one.
Yeah.
Like, I would say that pit stall one is such a huge advantage at Phoenix, they might need to move the line.
Let's move it to box two.
Yeah, hey. I don't know. Like,
I like the fact that it's the advantage.
I do too.
If you qualify in the pole, that ought to set you up with not a full step forward, but like a half step forward on the field.
Yeah. I guess it just depends on if you have the pole or not. If it's an advantage.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
If you're racing the guy that's on the pole. But yeah, when we sat down at the beginning of the year, that was our goals. And we executed our goals and won us a championship. So there's like no better feeling than that.
Talking about executing goals, and we're talking about a couple guys. Obviously, we're talking about the champions right now, but let's shift gears. A couple guys who weren't even in the championship four. You mentioned Cheddar Bob, car chief, on that four car. Kevin Harvick's last race. My man was looking like he was going to steal the show for a second.
Dude, I thought he was.
He lapped me. I'm like, get it. Go. Go.
He drove up there and passed the 24. I was like, damn, Harv.
So that was cool to see. I think the track changed and it didn't really play. Did anything happen on pit road? Or
I think they might have lost a little bit of track position on pit road, but there's cars like when it's so good in clean air and you get behind, it's so good in clean air that you get a stop or two behind on adjustments once you get in traffic. That's
yeah, and then you just can't get back.
There's just not enough pit stops to get it to make it better.
God, I would love to see Harvick roll out deuces with the win, but where do you end up finishing?
I don't know. He was in
six.
He was in the top 10.
Well, I think he's finishing the top 10, 35 races in a row for like the last 12 years?
There was a stat during the race that said the last time Harvick finished outside of the top 10 at Phoenix, none of the championship four had even made a cup start yet.
That is unbelievable.
That is dude.
Like, every race that you go to Phoenix, Kevin Harvick is going to finish in the top 10.
He should have won the first one here this year.
That might be one of the all-time greatest stats in NASCAR history.
Yeah, definitely an overlooked one.
Certainly, you know, to be top, I think, you know, I'm sure Richard Petty, what he win, like 40 times at North Wilkesboro or something like that. But Kevin Harvick, modern-day NASCAR, top 10 in, I don't know, it was like 22 or 23 in a row. That's unbelievable. Let's read just Kevin Harvick's stats real quick. 23 cup season, 60 wins, 31 poles, 16,058 laps led, and one cup series championship in 2014. He's won all the crown jewels, Daytona 500, Southern 500, Brickyard 400, Coca-Cola 600. Where do you list him in the all-time greats?
As far as like guys, I mean, I would say he's in the
seventh.
I would say he's in the top 10, top 12 for sure for me.
He's top 10.
Yeah.
Do you put him ahead or behind Tony Stewart?
I'd probably put Tony ahead of him just because he's won more championships. I mean, look, at the end of the day, I'd want either one of them driving my race car. If I had a race car, I'd want either one of them driving it. So I don't know. I'd have to look at stats, but like just my brain right off the bat, I would say I'd go with Tony, but hell, Kevin Harvick ain't no slouch.
He ain't no slouch. I do think that the garage and driver's voice is gonna certainly realize his absence. He's been super vocal in the meetings, just about the progression and the places that they want to take the sport, whether it's aero packages or tires or just overall, I don't know, driver star power, if you will. But it's gonna be super cool to have him in the booth. I think he's gonna really bring some energy and some seriousness to that Fox broadcast, which I'm excited to see. But I think if I'm Stuart Haas, I'm worried about that guy leaving too, because that guy is a boat rower for sure. He is a captain, if you will, keeping everybody straight. So it's going to be a pretty inexperienced driver lineup over at SHR. And when you lose one of the top 10 greatest drivers of all time, a lot of big shoes to fill over there.
Thank God they got that cool-looking Mustang for next year, because that thing looks like it's got some downforce.
Dude, them fenders are gnarly.
Yeah, but, you know, like, it looks cool, and they admit they had an issue this year. So I'm sure that they didn't make it worse.
Yeah.
But
what do you got any good Harvick stories? I got a good one.
Kevin Harvick was a mother pit around. He would run your heels over.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you just kind of knew it was coming. So I really never really talked to him until that day in your dad's office, since he's been coming around with Keelan getting seats fitted and stuff.
Yeah, we've been building a lot of seats for Keelan lately. I would say I've got several good Harvick stories, but Delana, Kevin's wife, was my dad's PR girl at Phoenix. So for James Finch, the one Bob Evans car in like 99, 2000, 01, kind of in that range. So we've known each other for a long time. She's known me since I was a little kid, but we were having a hard time built. So dad beg, borrows, and steals this car from some warehouse. It was old Penske drops. Did I tell a story?
Yeah, you did. Yeah, yeah. You dropped it off over there. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure dad texted him or something. He calls the shop on the landline at the shop. Hey, bring that thing up here and we'll finish it for you. So couldn't find spindles. Couldn't find lower A-frames for it. Literally dropped it off. He had people build it, get all the parts for it.
Damn good car.
And it was a good car. I think we ended up finishing third with it. Blew up leading to Dover. So that thing was sporty. Then we were...
He gave you a ride at Rockingham in one of his personal cars one time.
Let us borrow one of Ricky Carmichael's ARCA cars. So we got a motor from PME, and we thrashed on it. Clutch
burned
out.
Dude, I remember that clutch being burned out.
Practice. I think we missed practice.
Yeah, they were practicing it, and
we were at the
Wayno
shop.
Was in the shop. Yeah, we were all in the shop putting a clutch in it.
Yeah, so we missed practice, and we ended up running like 11th or 12th. So that was pretty cool to do that. He's done a lot of stuff for me, but so much stuff for people that, you know, it doesn't make – media. Another one I had, what was it? I don't know. I forgot, but I'm sure I'll say it another time. You guys heard that one. Kevin Harvick is a legend. Certified legend. Oh, you know who else is certified legends? Them dogs.
Ooh.
There was a dog that caught on fire this week.
Let's get into it.
Let's get right into it after this.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Do your pennies stretch as far as they used to? Most likely it doesn't. Here's why. It took 200 years for the U.S. to print its first $5 trillion. Today, Washington has done that in just 3 years. The problem, every new dollar makes each one of your dollars worth less, robbing you and every other hardworking American. But you can stop this cycle of robbery by diversifying your IRA or 401k into gold, an asset that has stood the test of time. Our new sponsor, Birch Gold Group, has helped tens of thousands of Americans protect their retirement savings with physical precious metals. Now you can too. Get a free info kit on gold right now by texting the word Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, to 989-898. With an A-plus rating with the BBB, you're in good hands with Birch Gold. So get your free info kit by texting Corey to the number 989-898. Go check them out. Put some pennies in some gold. All right, guys. It's time for some pit road boats and woes. Several woes and several dogs on pit road, because we had three sets of championship dogs. Where do you want to start?
Yeah. So Xfinity guys, I'm not doing a great job as pit road reporter, but I don't know who pits Ben Rhodes' truck. But good job to them. Yep. Good job. The double zero Cole Custer's guys. They're a lot of the 14 guys.
Okay.
So the ones who have the world record pit stop, Dakota Ratcliffe, Shane Papaya, on Sunday, the ones who did that 8-4, Shane Papaya was the one that was absolutely going insane on pit road. So good for those guys. And then, yeah, our group, we've talked about them. So yeah, dude,
shout out those guys one more time.
My guys.
Yeah.
Trevor Apsey.
Dog.
Not the dog. We're not the dogs of the week, but they're dogs. Trevor Apsey, Carrier, Jordan Osinski, Jackman, Zach Price, two-time champ, rear changer.
Who did he win the championship with first time?
Joey.
Okay.
Yep. And Chris Conklin, Gasman.
Dog.
And I changed front tires.
Somewhat of a dog.
Some
old dog.
Be a dog. Don't need no cats. Meow. But yeah, that dude, the big one. So it was a bummer for the 20 car. You know, they won the pit crew challenge on the 54 earlier in the year.
Do they do a good job on the broadcast of explaining why rotors blow?
Yeah, I think they did a really good job. I saw a cutaway car and
so they talk about cooling, yep, and get hot and get too cold, and then pow.
If you look on Twitter, Parker Klingerman put it up and he's like, I don't know if Emmy's get nominated for, but it was really good. And yeah. Letart is like second to none. They do a good job with that, and it sounds like they just had, like, I go back and watch the first stop.
Not enough tape, right?
I watched the pit stops. It looks like they had really aggressive brake pads in it, because all those guys, and it happened up and down pit road all weekend, all those guys fell in brake dust coming around the car. Like, they tripped up in it. It happened on, even on our teams, on the 22, Trevor slipped in it. Yeah, there was a lot of brake dust, and then the pit stalls are like fresh concrete. So when it sits on there, it's just slick. But the one, dude, did you see the Xfinity race?
Yeah.
See Sammy Smith, the 18 car start on fire?
I was there watching outside the track, so I didn't have a screen to look at it. I was just listening to the MRN broadcast. Then I saw a video, and my man was on fire.
Ryan Zunk.
Dog of the week.
Dog, dude. Yeah, so Ray Hernandez, gas man, who went, sometimes you fuel head stick open or whatever, you go full Andrew Lackey, the gas man on two car, and just there was obviously a big fuel spill. And there's a couple different angles on Twitter. We'll put them up on our Instagram here at Stacking Pennies as well. But come around, he sparks a lug nut on the left rear.
It's like it's in slow motion. Like when you hit that lug nut and there's that one spark, tink.
It sucks all the oxygen out of there. But
remember when you tried to catch me on fire?
This son of a bitch.
We had, I don't know why we put a bonfire, like a big bonfire pit right next to the racetrack, but it was a great idea at the time. And after the race was all over, we had boxes and we had pallets and we had this. We're gonna have a big old bonfire. We stacked this thing, and it's a 6 foot high mountain of just stuff to burn. We also got the great idea. We got a couple extra gallons of methanol. We put in these go-karts left over. So why not just make this thing a gigantic inferno, and we're dumping this gas? Well, this son of a bitch lights a piece of cardboard that was the size of about a half a sheet of paper, and he's holding it, and the flame is getting lower and lower. Meanwhile, Casey and I are still like dumping this gas. So it started to burn his fingers, and he flicks it. And it was like, I saw him do it, and it was like slow motion. As it like, I turn around, and literally, like you said, the damn oxygen.
Yeah, it was a big explosion. Not my proudest moment. You're like, why did you do that? And I'm like, I don't know.
I didn't want to burn my finger.
But like, I literally could have thrown it anywhere else in the field other than the pit of gasoline. But
so yes, that's what my man was standing in.
But like, so much of being a pit crew guy is just high level decision making and staying calm under pressure, right? So that's why Ryan Zunk starts on fire, then stands up, casually walks over to the fireman, puts his arms up. He's like, hey, I'm on fire. Then he's like, hey, missed a spot over here, my left hip. Then he just turns around, walks back to the left rear. They're still, the firemen are still spraying the ground. He looks back at them like, okay, stop. It's out. Tightens the wheel and they go on. So that, I mean, there ain't no other definition. If that ain't a dog on pit road, then I don't know what is.
That's the definition of a dog.
And that's what, like I said, that's what pit road is made of. That's what all of our dogs of the year have been. Go back to Charlie Plank and all the guys that have set fast pit stop times. The six car wins the Mechanics Wear Award. They've been a great pit crew all year long. They've had a ton of speed throughout the playoffs. So kudos to them on winning the Mechanics Wear Award. But also kudos to my man Ryan Zunk for hanging in there, starting on fire, not panicking. Hell, he's got a full show. He's got a full beard. He's a grinder. He's
apparently
he's like me. He's not like an athlete type. He's a grinder. He's the guy that kind of when he does five, he's really good five lugging guy. He was at Roush for a while, and you know when they get in a bind and either have people hurt or penalized, he comes in and bails them out on one lug nuts. So he's a good dude and definitely the dog of the week. So
it's a big honor. Last dog of the year.
Last dog of the week, and hey, we go out on fire, literally.
Might as well.
So
go out in a ball of flame.
We'll have some more dogs for you next year.
We're going to have some 2023. We're going to give some grades here. We're going to do some report card grades for several teams that we picked out right after this. See if y'all agree.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
For me, race day is a great reason to shut down the laptop, put the phone on silent, and simply enjoy the driving. But Mobile One wants to remind you that you can get that same kind of escape any day of the week. How? By simply hopping in your car, rolling the windows down, and hitting the road. No emails, no calls, no work, just freedom. Mobile One, for the love of driving. And we're back. End of the year, you get a grade. That's what the teacher gives you.
Report card.
A report card, if you will. End of the year grade to see if you passed. Some guys did. Most guys did. Some guys didn't. We're going to start off with the 24. Huh? William Byron coming to fruition in his career, if you will. He's growing a beard. He's also growing a hell of a career while he's at it. My man had a hell of a season. Let's read the stat line. William Byron, 25 years old. 6 dubs this year. He has won a race in the last 4 seasons, you know. 15 top fives, career high. 21 top tens, also a career high. 4 poles, career high. Finished where? 2nd in the championship.
3rd.
Oh, it was the 5 and then the 24. I feel like I got to give William Byron an A. Maybe A plus.
I agree with that. I think they graded themselves this week and he gave himself like a B or something, but that's an A. That's an A-plus year. I mean, you put yourself in position to win a championship. It's not, you know, it's going to work out or it's not. One race a year, and absolutely.
Yeah, him and Rudy were the best. I mean, I think the most solid team throughout the course of the year.
Yeah.
They just didn't win the last race.
Yeah.
Next up, we got
Denny.
Denny.
3 wins, 14 top fives, 19 top tens. And 4 poles. They had a hell of a year. But it's kind of the same thing that we've seen with Denny, right? Great. One of the greatest race car drivers ever do it. Probably one of the highest racing IQs we've ever seen. But the championship just eludes him. And that'll be another talking point next year.
Yep.
But it was also, I mean, obviously it didn't go as long. It was also a talking point with Kyle Busch for a long time. So he got it done.
He got it done.
See if Danny can. But I'd give Danny's group. That's,
how many more does he have, you think? I think he's got two.
I would say like Kevin Harvick would have had more than he did, but he didn't. He's younger than Kevin Harvick, but you just never know when it's going to be done.
Never know. I want to do a head-to-head.
Okay.
A lot of chatter in the offseason. Tyler Reddick versus Kyle Busch. More or less swapping rides. I know it's not. Tyler Reddick essentially going from Chevy to Toyota, a JGR satellite team, and then Kyle Busch occupying his seat. Same amount of wins Kyle Busch had in that 8 car as Tyler Reddick had last year. But I felt like TR was a little more competitive than 8.
Definitely went further in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Kyle Busch, 3 wins, 5 top 10s, 17 top, or 10 top 5, 17 top 10s. What was the 45?
2 dubs, 10 top 5, 16 top 10s.
Yeah, so much of this, man, is about when your team gets hot, like we've been talking about. And it used to be, you know, the season. They're hot for the season. But now I said it at the beginning of the playoffs, it's 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It's a 3-week cycle. And
well, when we left the West Coast swing, it looked like you just go ahead and give Kyle Busch the trophy.
Amen.
That feels like it was 2 years ago. I mean, him and Randall were on one to start the season. Big dubs.
These years are getting longer. I'm telling you.
Dude, it's a grind.
It's getting, like, I've said the word grind a lot, but it's definitely getting longer.
It is a freaking grind. So, to start, we were just looking at it today, actually, in our comp meeting. From L.A. until, actually, there might be an off week in between L.A. and Daytona. From the Daytona 500, it's 22 straight weeks until that 2-week Olympic break in the summer.
Yeah.
And then you close it on out. But, hey, we also know what we signed up for. But it is, I'm ready for the offseason. I don't know about y'all, but I'm ready to rock.
I'd say when you look at the 8 and the 45, their success came at different times. Obviously, the 45 went a little bit deeper in the playoffs, but I'd say they had lateral moves, lateral years.
Think so?
Yeah, I would think so.
Tyler Reddick had a bump from last year.
He had a little bit more pace.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, as far as when you just look at results, I think that they're both upset. I think Kyle Busch is a little bit more of a proven driver, so his team is probably thinks they should have done a little bit more with it, with a, you know, a champion and who Kyle Busch is. And Tyler Reddick, you would say, is still growing.
Yeah, and I think
in a team that's still growing.
Yeah, there was a couple instances, wins they just gave away on pit road. Nashville, wheel falls off leading the race.
Yeah.
A couple other times they were in contention and weren't able to get the job done. I would give the 45 a B minus.
Yeah, I'd give him a straight B, B plus.
16 points. Yeah, let's give him a straight B.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love it. I'm going to see him next week down in Iowa, so I'm going to ask him.
Ask him. I'm curious what he would give a grade for himself. Let's also be specific. We're not going to give grades that are measured against the champion, right? I think we give grades on the execution and the overall success of that team versus the expectations.
Correct. Yeah, that's – oh, yeah. Everybody's graded on a curve here.
Yep.
Here it's here in the Stack and Pennies Lounge.
Here in the Stack and Pennies Lounge, the teachers are strict. What do you give Kyle Busch?
I just give them a B as well. Or like a B, yeah, like a B minus. They just with Kyle Busch, you're graded on a curve.
No doubt. I mean, the guy's 3-time champ.
But RCR, when's the last time a driver won 3 races at RCR other than last year with Tyler Reddick?
That's true. been a minute.
Yeah.
Since the 2014 champ Kevin Harvick was there.
Yeah.
Kevin Harvick's final season.
Oh man, probably C.
Yeah, it's not good.
It just didn't close out. Like the closer didn't close out, and it was just it was a little bit of everything.
He was 10 spots ahead of the other 3 cars in camp, and those guys were just rowing that boat as hard as they could. SHR just missed it.
Hey, yeah, Storehouse has a lot of work to do. Good for them for winning the Xfinity Championship.
2 years removed from, congrats on the Xfinity Series Championship. 2 years removed from Kevin Harvick winning 9 races.
Yeah, man. It's this, hey.
It's next gen cars.
Hey, this ain't owned. It's rented, right? It's rented and you got to pay rent every year. That's for sure.
And then the old 7 car. They asked me this question exactly. What grade do you give yourself? That's why I presented this for Stack and Pennies. I believe that was Jordan Bianchi who asked for our grades. And I will give him the same answer. I believe we had an A-, even though there were several races where we didn't meet our expectations. I think there was a lot of races that we met our expectations at least and then overachieved. So A-, I think there's lots of improvement for us to be had in terms of just pace. If we had the pace that we bring occasionally every 6-7 weeks, we'll bring like a heater to the racetrack. We saw Watkins Glen, we had pace, qualified in the top 10, had a leaky left front shock, had to start last at the hardest place on the schedule to pass. So we shot ourselves in the foot there. I spun out at Bristol when we qualified in the top 10, had a really good car there. So if we can bring those cars with pace more often, which I know we're capable of, I think we're going to be, I think we could have a Michael McDowell legitimately type season. Like he had this year. I think those guys obviously won Indy to get those guys, but those guys were just solid every week. And I think that our team is capable of that in the future as well, getting some more consistent teammates. A little bit of Trackhouse association with that Zane Smith car, I think will help. Carson's obviously got a lead foot. He's going to come over there and extract some speed out of ours too.
Dude,
do you want to just get into the trucks?
Dude, what do you do with that kid?
Tell him not to wear his own t-shirts to the racetrack.
Yeah, that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
I haven't been really on the Carson Hosevar hate train by any means. There's been a lot of people on it. But, dog, what are you doing?
Race? Going to the front like Danny Torres says. Where are you going, amigo? To the front.
You can tell that like there's not a Ron Hornaday there to punch his kids in the face.
Yeah.
And I talked to I was having a conversation with another driver this week that had a conversation with Ty Gibbs. And Ty Gibbs brought up a good point. He said, I've only raced against kids who pay for their rides and race this way. Right? Like, but if you look at it, right, even from super late models and up, there's nobody. I mean, you ain't gonna run into Bubba Pollard, right?
Or Matt McCall or Jamie Yelton, but, right back in the day.
But those guys aren't an ARCA.
Right.
Right. And these kids aren't going to, it doesn't seem like they're going to Nashville Fairgrounds to learn anymore. I mean, they stop there, but they're not doing it weekly enough to get in a quarrel with somebody.
Yeah.
But you go to ARCA and it's not really that. And then the truck series really doesn't have that. I mean, I know Matt Crafton punched Nick Sanchez, but like getting punched is one thing. But when you have like, I've heard Dale Jr. talk about it. Like when you have Terry Labonte show up at your bus, say, hey, like that's a different deal. Or you have, you know, in the Cup Series, you have that with Kevin Harvick. You know, you used to have in the Xfinity Series a little bit more. Like even Elliott Sadler brought that to the table in the Xfinity Series. And it's just not the elder statesman that we used to have. Those series are just younger with funded drivers now. And it makes it tough for the kids to learn, but like Hosevar is going to learn when he gets to the Cup Series if he keeps that up.
I mean, he's super fast.
And he's been in the Cup Series,
He's been in the Cup Series for, you know, 8-10 races this year.
He plugged you in the fence somewhere?
He plugged me in the fence at Darlington. We talked about it as well. And I think that right after that was when he signed up to do our deal. So we just bared it and talked through it and kept it moving. But, yeah, I think there's going to be for everybody. There's just learning moments of etiquette and you know, it's freaking hard, man. The trying to prove yourself, trying to drive a race car as fast as possible, trying to earn respect, not really caring if you have respect or not, but inevitably you have to generally race everybody to gain respect. And I think through a full-time season, it's a lot different jumping in somebody's car that you're borrowing. And you're the fill-in guy and don't really have anything to lose in terms of points and not worried if you crash, not worried about your respect level because it's not your car versus when it's your name on top of the door and it's your guys getting paid bonuses off of your how you meet your goals if you finish races, do all the things. So
the pay-to-play model is more so – I won, we lost, you fix it than anything, right? Like it's like if you're paying, if you're funding something, you're not like super invested into it. which I'm not saying that all these guys aren't, but like it, you're going to race, like you race a rental car at GoPro Motorplex,
yeah,
right? What's the difference? You're going to go out there and use it up and send that guy off into the barriers and trying to win.
That's right.
So yeah, it's tough, but you're going to have your hands full with two rookie drivers next year. Zane's a little bit calmer.
Yeah, he's a little calm. I mean, I think both are going to be additions to our team, and just I'm glad I don't have to do all the sim work. I'll let those guys just go.
I remember Ty was getting crucified last year, and Joey stuck up for him. Joey said, you know, it's really hard to be him, and I'll stick up for Josvar on this front, even though he's messed up a lot. They're young guys. They're kids.
20, yeah.
And they're learning. And they're learning in front of a national stage. So when you mess up at Stafford, right, there's some eyeballs on it. But when you mess up on FS1 in a championship race, there's a lot more people talking about it.
Exactly.
And they're maturing in front of the nation. Yeah, and everybody being a professional athlete, that's part of your job, is you get criticized each week by –
people. Everybody's got a phone.
That's it. You want to be a pro? It's part of being a pro. I get it. I get crucified every week on Blaney's Pit Crew.
Yep.
But those who know.
That's right. And then what about 12 team? Wrap it all off.
Report card. You win the championship, it's an A+. I'm not going to be one of the dweebs that sits here and like, well, you know, it could have been a little faster if I got off the right front a little bit. No, we won the championship, it's A+.
That's right. See y'all next
year. Yep. Can come. If you don't think it's A+ year, I'll let you come see my ring when I get it.
That's right. Come on. Yeah. Shiny.
Yep. I'm done with all that.
What does it look like though, in terms of just like Team Penske parties?
Yeah.
Holiday parties. Does it look a little different now that you got the big trophy?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like last year was so happy for my teammates on the 22, but they're like, I'm not going to lie. There was a little bit of me that was pissed off because I felt like it should have been our championship. And at the end of the year, when you don't win it, it's such a defeating, like just a defeated feeling of just like, oh, gotta get back on the horse, right? And we got on the plane yesterday and I saw like a Instagram post from Ryan Preece, and it was like 2024 starts now, and I'm like, I ain't looking at that pit car until January.
Technically, like, it doesn't start till January
1st. No but you know that you get back and put the work in, but like, man, I'm gonna enjoy this. And it's, you know, the new challenge is when we get to 2024, the hardest time for a team is the year after they win a championship. That's why what Jimmy Johnson did was so impressive. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to face that next year with our guys and work through that. But first, yes, the banquet in Nashville, I'm sure it's going to be a hell of a time. Blaney's got a lot of music friends.
Dang.
Going to go see Stitch by Mitch and get a mosaic suit made.
Hey.
So I'm pretty pumped
you
about
manifested
that.
Manifested that too, by the way.
I did. I've been manifesting a lot of this.
So what's your idea for a suit?
I was going to get it like you got for your wedding. You open the suit up and the lining is all the pictures from the year. So I'm picking out some pit crew pictures. There should be 10 or 20 pictures in there of just kind of to document our season in the suit, and get a nice fitted tux or suit, whatever Stitch by Mitch recommends.
Old Mitch Perkins, and check them out.
Yeah.
Now, didn't Joey get bolo ties made of the championship trophy?
They had bolo ties last year. Yeah, I wasn't there, but yeah, I saw them. That was a hell of an idea. I think that.
Rumor has it that there's some ideas swirling around about a potential tattoo.
Tattoos, yeah.
Would you get one?
I would think about it. It's not off the table for
me.
Would
you get it?
Not next to my Long John Silver.
Not next to the Long John Silver.
I'd get
where
it on
would
my,
you get one?
Probably.
Ass cheek?
If I was like getting a matching tattoo with me, with like our team, I would go in like the Blaney spot. And like he's got like that leg sleeve.
He's got
sleeve.
An entire got like Darth Vader on his leg.
He's got like an R2-D2 Chewbacca leg. But I would just probably put it down there. Some like it, because that would be like, yeah, like you don't have to see it all the time, but like, hey, brotherhood.
Right here.
Champs. My Chewbacca leg.
And I feel like that's, everybody's going to be bought in. I think that if like everybody signs off, you just can't not get one.
Oh, yeah, I'll just get inked up.
Yeah.
I've already got some.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, I'll put.
Think it's going to be?
I don't know.
I got to say, it would just be trophy.
Just the silhouette of the trophy.
The Bill France Cup is pretty sick.
It's so sick, dude.
That is a cool looking trophy.
It's so sick. Yeah. Yeah.
Pictures are
Nashville. Nashville's going to be fun.
Well, you might come back with some new ink after
that. Hey, I'll go.
Get it under your eye like a little teardrop.
Like a teardrop. Like, oh, just the
championship trophy.
Just the championship trophy teardrop.
That is not the Penske way, bro.
And then stacking over pennies on yeah. the other eyebrow.
Oh, yeah. Get on my knuckles. No, that wouldn't work.
Nope.
Too many letters.
Yeah. Just drop the vowels.
Well.
We're going to drop the vowels. We're also going to drop some penny for your thoughts questions.
Let's go.
You guys fired off some good ones. Unfortunately, Danielle's not here to read them. We're on a special location, by the way, today. We're in Off-Axis World Headquarters. The guys, Greg Stump and his crew who paints my helmets, we're in transition from NASCAR's studio in the basement at the Hall of Fame to their new building in Concord. So we needed a spot, and Greg opened the door gladly for us, and we set this thing up, and we're chopping it up and giving you the Championship Edition episode. And we're going to give you some Championship Edition answers for Penny for your thoughts. Let's roll it.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
From Logan Zachary. Y'all talked a lot about tires on the podcast this week. Obviously, the solution is a softer tire. Until that happens, could NASCAR not give teams as many sets? Now, do you think, let's go to the first part of this. Do you think a softer tire is the answer?
So we did it. Phoenix had a thicker gauge rubber tread compound on this tire, similar to what they had at Martinsville. I believe that's the right direction. With that, I think they need to take some durometer, some softness out, or make the tire softer. Now there, I can make a point for one way or the other. I think there's both an argument, but I think that people get infatuated by this more power, less downforce, tires that fall off to nothing argument, because there's a couple people on social media that, you know, think it's going to be better, or drivers with the loud microphone. When the cars fall off, when the cars are sliding around, you're not going to get the side-by-side racing as consistently as you might think. Because if the car's a handful by yourself, you're not going to drive it door-to-door next to the freaking guy that's also ass over tea kettle trying to drive his box not hit the wall either. So I think that people get too hyper-focused on, oh, we got to make tires that fall off to canvas and see who's, you know, the real drivers. All you're going to get is cars that are spaced out, and you might get one or two guys with some longevity in their setup that might blast through the field if you save your tires, quote-unquote, the first couple laps of the run. That's the direction the Goodyear's going. That's the direction we're going to try at the test at Phoenix. They're also trying the up-down splitter. They're trying to take – we're going to have half the amount of downforce at the test as we had at this race. Now, there are certain tracks that just probably aren't going to provide the best racing, and you guys can probably figure out which ones those are. So NASCAR is going to go down that path. Interested to see how it does. I think my point of view is cars are too heavy. I think they're 200-300 pounds too heavy. They need about 200 more horsepower, and I think that they need to take overall tire off the car, because with these wider wheels, they went from 15 to 18, made the sidewall smaller, but they've also added an inch and a half of width per tire. So that's 6 inches more rubber on the ground than what we had with a heavier car, and essentially less downforce because the transaxle robs some more power than the 4.9-inch did. So if the cars were lighter and they had a little bit less tire on the ground, they would have a closer weight horsepower to weight ratio is what the previous cars had. So I think you'd be able to slip and slide around a little bit more, but that's way above my pay grade.
Would you make a smaller wheel?
entire, or just make the tire smaller?
I think they can make
the Tongtac patch.
So like the Garage 56 car, they made wider wheels to accommodate a wider tire.
So you just make a narrower wheel?
I think you keep the same wheels and you just make the tread of the tire narrower. But I'm also not a tire engineer, so
like
I don't know how the hell it
like
works.
A sportsman modified.
It won't be that egregious.
No, I know.
But if you took an inch out of the inch and a half that they added, you're going to get somewhat back within reason, just taking overall rubber off the ground.
I don't think,
but
until that happens, could NASCAR give teams like not as many sets? Ah. I mean, we didn't give teams many sets for Wilkesboro, so, right? And they didn't change much.
No.
So
it's not gonna, if you restart the race on 70 lap old tires, you're not gonna get people smashing into each other.
No.
You get people running into each other and spinning each other out on new tires. When you have some grip and you can attack the corner and you can attack the center of the corner and generate a run. If everybody's slipping sliding around like Wilkesboro, when Kyle Larson could have lapped the field if it went another 25 laps, is that what we want to do? I don't think so. So
do you?
I don't like. I'm not really in the corner of like, hey, we need the tires that fall off the canvas, and we need 0 pounds of downforce, and we need that. So I think that's my argument.
I would say that if you limit the number of tires for the team, the first thing people would do is just start saving tires.
Yeah.
Right, and then you just try to save tires to run. But, yeah, second question. The reason we talk so much about the tires, Logan, is because it's the only thing that touches the track as well.
That's right.
So it makes a big difference. Nathan Dillard. Ooh, for me. Skip, how many beers did you shotgun? None. I just drank them calmly.
Mm. What was the beer choice? Bush Lights?
Cause they Keystone, were... buddy.
Oh, yeah.
Team you got that Keystone sponsorship, and then had a liquor drink or two at the dinner afterwards and smoked Stogue. So that was Nathan Dillard. Nathan Grant asks, kind of like how Supercross has the red plate, how would you feel if the champ ran a gold roof number the following year as the reigning champ branding?
That'd be pretty cool.
I think it'd be cool too.
Yeah.
F1 does the number one. Don't they do number one?
You have the option to run the number option. One. You don't have to.
Blaney gave Ross the number one this weekend.
Called him number one, which I don't have a problem with. Ross has got his team to go drive for too. So I appreciate Ross racing hard. Maybe not error blocking a championship battle potentially or
inhibiting
that, but hey, it's part of it.
Ross is Florida man all the way. He's going to, okay. You know what you get. You know what you're getting. Listen, I'm on Blaney's team. I'm not mad about it. But Blaney is old school. He don't like blocking. He don't like slide. You don't like short slide jobs. And you don't like air blocking.
And he's pretty vocal about both.
Yep. Hey, this is why I love the sport. This is why I love where we're at as a sport. Because 15 years ago, those guys would have went back to the coaches and called each other and talked about it and waved each other by.
Yeah.
And now it's like, nope. I'm winning.
Yeah.
I do love that about, I do love that about the Cup Series. Yes.
So I don't want to get down a rabbit hole. I wish drivers, when they came into the Cup Series, could pick numbers. Like F1, but problem is the team has the number that has all the equity and all the stuff, right? Team Penske's always gonna have the 2 and 12, just like Hendrick's always gonna have the 24. So I could see the counter argument, but it would be cool to pick your own number, like F1 guys.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when you were going to Spire, it was a big sticking point that you wanted a single digit number for marketing purposes.
Yeah. So that we had to do a little negotiating with Tommy Baldwin to get it because he still had it. But yes, and also 7 was just like my favorite number growing up. So that's just actually coincidental that we got that.
Yeah. Man, it's been a hell of a year.
It has been a hell of a year. And I love people just screaming at us, Stacking Pennies.
Love it.
Stacking Pennies fans at Phoenix. So all the stuff that you guys write, all the stuff you guys say on social media, we see it and we hear it and we're trying to work and give you guys great, great content. We got a lot of great stuff planned for next year with some video stuff and who knows where we go with this thing, but we're only going one way and that's to the top, to the FRONT, to the front, buddy. So that leaves this last penny stacker of the week. And it's everybody who listens to us. I know that's a cop-out answer, but it's not, because if it wasn't for you guys tuning in, then we probably wouldn't be doing this, no way. Because we talk to each other enough during the week, so we just wouldn't want to probably record our pod or conversations anyways. But yet we do it for you because we love you. And we love the sport in which we, one of us here now, is a champion in.
Let's
go. One more time. Congratulations.
Let's go.
One last story for the winter to leave you guys hanging on the edge of your seat until we fire this thing back up next season. We might do a Christmas special. Who knows? Actually, I talked to Eric Amarola. I'm trying to get him to come in the studio too. He's got some cool stories on how his next quote-unquote adventure is coming about, how this one ended, where the phone call came, and where he's going to be spending a little bit of time next year. He's got an interesting story there. So this story, I've been debating it to say on the podcast for a couple of weeks. I believe I've told you this story. I don't know if I have or not. So we were at Texas. This is actually my birthday weekend. So at the race, didn't have tremendous speed. We were a 20th-ish place car. And I got a little bit too high out of turn two, spun out during the race, slid. Didn't really get much damage. But as I was rolling a pit road, right rear tire blew and ripped the quarter panel, ductwork, the crush panel, all the stuff out, and we just rode around wounded the rest of the day. Slow, second and a half off.
Wounded shoulder. Soldier.
There is nothing that's more cruel and unusual punishment than a driver that made a mistake and has to ride around wounded the rest of the day.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, it is the freaking worst. And you feel like everybody in the grandstands is pointing at you laughing. You know your guys on the box are just like, this no driving son of a bitch, right? So we went another 300 miles.
Oh, man.
And I'm just, brown. And meanwhile, I'm in my head like, are you ever going to be good at this? Are you ever going to get success? Are you ever going to win a race? And the answer's like, no. I'm just sitting there like pouting, right? No.
You suck.
Yeah.
You jackass.
Yeah. So I get out of the car and I put my head down. I go to the plane. I'm sitting on the plane. I'm making my notes, right? And I'm like, going through this like infinite amount of things I could have done different. Why did you try running up that high? You know, the PJ1 wasn't activated, all this stuff. So I've got my ear pods in. I'm just listening to nothing. It's just stewing. Right. And halfway asleep, halfway not. And, the landing gear comes out and it kind of like half wakes me up, but I wasn't really sleeping. And I heard like it was on my phone playing music. I heard the Holy Spirit say, are you done trying to do it yourself? So I like looked around. I was like, Kelly was sitting next to me. I was like looking at her like, did you say that? And I was like looking around. I had like write it down because it was that clear.
Yeah.
It was, are you done trying to do it yourself? And I like did a quiet time trying to figure out what is this? I write it all out. I'm thinking about it for days, right? It was just like on the front of my brain, are you done trying to do it yourself? Are you done trying to do it yourself? So it was, I kind of come to like, I've asked the Lord to come into like all these different areas of my life, my marriage, my friendships, my parenting, all this stuff. And it's easy to do that because you realize really quickly, you don't have what it takes to like manage all of it and do it well. And like, you know, do all the stuff that you would want to do it the right way without some help. One thing I haven't done is invite the Lord into like physically driving. Like you say your prayer protection, but like, all right, dude, I got this. I've been doing it my entire life. Let me go figure it out. So there's still more to the story, right? And rarely have I just asked the Lord to like, all right, I'm done trying to do it myself. Give me some help here in the actual act of driving. So fast forward a week, we go to Talladega. We qualified the second to worst car. And there's not much that more chaps my ass than qualifying terrible at Super Speedway.
I know.
So Saturday after qualifying, I am sour. Like in the bus, watching College Game Day.
You were so mad. I got yelled at about it.
Dude, I was just in a piss poor mood. There's a freaking Halloween special going on in the DO lot, and all these kids are dressed up for Halloween, and I'm just like a potato on the couch.
You're like them Kelly, Scrooge McDuff for Halloween.
I was.
Bah humbug.
And Kelly was outside with Levi, and Levi's going around trick-or-treating, and Kelly's like, get your ass out here and stop pouting. And I said, we're qualified second to last. We're freaking terrible. We're going to get lapped five times tomorrow. We're that slow. And she's like, did you forget that you what you heard like 6 days ago? Yeah, I'm like, yeah, that was last week. He was talking about last week. It wasn't talking about this week. She's like, just come out here and stop being a sourpuss. So luckily, I get on the tractor for a hayride, and that tractor went just about as fast as my race car didn't qualify. And so I had time to think about, and I was wrestling with it. Levi's got his candy basket, this, that, and the other thing. So I'm like, you know what? I'm done trying to do it myself. Show me something. I sit in the car on Sunday, buckle up, pull the belts tight. And I said, all right, we qualify second to last. I am done trying to do it myself. Sure enough, we turned around and finished fourth. So that is how I kind of finished the year of like, all right, I'm done trying to do it myself. But there's a lot of things in my life that I've applied that to now of like trying to not do it myself. And I would encourage everybody that listens to this podcast, there's probably an area of your life that you're probably trying to do it yourself. So this off season, try to figure out what that is and tune back into us next year or next week or whenever we drop another one of these, be on the lookout. If there's anything good, we're coming at you with some stuff. This is Stacking Pennies presented by Mobile One, guys. Ryan Flores, 2023 Cup Series Front Tire Changer Champion.
Let's go.
Corey LaJoy. This is it. Appreciate you guys.